Tonight's episode of the Shining Wizards podcast is brought to you by the Shining Wizards Network, www.shiningwizardsnetwork.com. 9 great shows, 1 great place, including Pro Wrestling 101 with 20-year veteran Justin Credible, 2.5 wrestlers featuring Kevin Matthews, Pat Buck, and Jay Silva, the Turnbuckle Throwbacks from Staten Island, the Impact Play of Mr. Phil Rea and Dave Megapowers, taking it from the current to the way back, the Midnight Jory, Mike Norenganger and Adam Heading from Philadelphia, giving you wrestling, pop culture, and horror movies from the 80s and 90s, the Fallen Angels triplets, Dante, Kanzer, and Krim Gideon, giving you the ins and outs of their experiences on the pro wrestling independent scene, the Neckbreaker podcast, Brian and John from Boston, giving you pro wrestling and heavy metal news, and to top it off, from north of the border, Apex Radio with our friend the Stickman, and the Forearms and Funk Radio Spectacular with the Wolfman Jack Foley. That's the Shining Wizards Network, available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Audio Boo, and at www.shiningwizardsnetwork.com, where it's entertainment here. The following is a presentation of the Shining Wizards Network, available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Audio Boo, and ShiningWizardsNetwork.com.
Hey, guess what? We've been telling you for a couple of months now that Bar Jitsu, the American art of bar fighting, is going to be available soon. Well, guess what? It's available now. Become the barroom stud you've always wanted to be. I can't talk because somebody used the book on me and punched me in the larynx. Don't let that happen to you. Bar Jitsu at BARJUTSU.com. The American Art of Bar Fighting. Pick it up now, motherfucker.
Bar Jitsu, the American Art of Bar Fighting, is now available at BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon.com, on your Nook, on your Kindle, and in your hands on paperback. Go to BarJutsu.com for more information.
Hello, wrestling fans. This is the Alpha Female, and you're listening to Shining Wizard.
Gentlemen, welcome to a weird edition of the Shining Wizards Wrestling Podcast, where it's wrestling talk.
Talk about wrestling.
I'm the Abominable Snowman.
I'm Yukon Cornelius.
I am Sasquatch.
Okay, good enough. I take that.
Sounds good to me.
He's not the same as the Snowman, is he?
Well, you could have said Frosty.
Well, I didn't want it. Christmas is over. We're getting to the end of January.
Yeah, but he went Yukon Cornelius, which I thought was a great call.
Who's Yukon Cornelius?
He's the red-headed lumberjack guy that was chasing the Abominable Snowman, wasn't he?
Yeah.
That's all right. You don't need to know that, dude. It's okay. Your life will not change with that information in hand.
never know.
You never know.
The snowstorm will not stop the Shining Wizards Wrestling Podcast.
No, but it will stop my kid from having to go to school tomorrow, so it will stop me from going to work. Day off, bitch.
2 in a row, huh, you lazy sack?
It's not my fault, dude. 5:30 this morning, I'm in the shower. My wife's like, sweetheart, the school called. Early dismissal today. I was like, fuck. I'm like, what am I doing up at 5:30 if it's an early dismissal day?
Well, whatever. Snow day, no day. For the Shining Wizards, It's a go day.
That's right. We are going to speak to Little Egypt from the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. And we are also speaking to the phenomenal one, AJ Styles, late of TNA, current of Ring of Honor, Combat Zone Wrestling, and probably a promotion near you.
Yeah,
dude. Yeah, man.
This is so hard with us on Skype because we can't see each other and we kind of step on each other's words. But, you know, we had to get this done. This was big for us.
For you.
For what?
For you, for the fan, for the listener.
Oh, yeah. For them. Good call.
For them. For you. We sacrifice for our art, for our passion, to bring you the best from the world of professional wrestling. How's that for a tagline? We should do that.
I like that. Sorry. It's so freaking weird.
Say that again?
Yeah, you see him, poor Kevin is all by himself on a regular landline.
We're all by myself. He's in the laundry room. I'm in the squeaky chair. You're in the cozy studio.
I'm in the studio, baby, with my iced tea and lots of gas.
Well, that's actually the only saving grace of this, is that we don't have to hear or be in the presence of Tony farting into a microphone.
Isn't it great?
It's actually refreshing.
Okay, speaking of refreshing, why don't we do a little bit of wrestling news before we speak to Little Egypt?
You want to do wrestling news? You want to talk about TNA Impact?
Oh, you know what? I can talk about my trip to East Coast Pro Wrestling.
All right, let's do, you know what? I just really want to quickly run through TNA, if we could do that.
Okay, quickly, you said. So I'm putting you on the clock. You have 35 seconds.
First of all, 35. I need more than 35
32 seconds. 32
seconds. First of all, no disrespect to Gunner and TNA. Holy shit. Way to promote something and then not come through with it.
Why? You don't like the part one and part two?
I knew there was part one and there was part two, but they advertised that they were going to wrestle Thursday night. And instead, we get some mix and match Team Dixie against Team TNA. Ugh.
Dude, that match, though, I hate the bait and switch. That was terrible. But that match was actually the only watchable part about Impact. If there was actually one good thing about Impact this week, it was that match, even though it wasn't what we were promised and it sucks. But that match I thought was good. I thought the brawl was good. So I did enjoy it for what it was, but at the same time, it wasn't what we were promised, and which you can never, especially for a live show, which is getting a live crowd, which is paying to see what you've been advertising, is not fair. And I just thought it wasn't cool, but for what it was, I actually enjoyed it. But other than that, Genesis was absolutely abysmal.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Tony. I say it every week. Dixie Carter is awful. Just flat out awful, awful, awful.
Did you see my Facebook posting during Impact on Thursday?
I did not. I actually worked Thursday night.
The wife kind of digs on the Dixie Carter. Yeah.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah.
For each other.
Yeah.
I mean, let's quick rundown. Bully Ray, Mr. Anderson, no DQ. They fucking hype the fire. And they go, they get the table, they put the lighter fluid on it. He brings out the lighter, low blow, pile driver, end of match. Doesn't even set the table on fire and power
bomb. You know why? Because they're going to want you to pay for that, dude. That's why. That's smart business. I don't mind that so much. I mind Ken Anderson fucking looking like Mike from fucking Desperate Housewives. And somebody said he sounds like Dane Cook.
You're a fag.
Thanks.
What? I don't watch Desperate Housewives. Kevin, Desperate Housewives.
I don't watch it.
Well, first of all, it's not on anymore. And second of all, my wife was obsessed with it. So my Sunday nights when The Sopranos weren't on, I got stuck watching that garbage. So
you don't have a second TV in your basement or your bedroom?
Yo, my TV in my living room is dying. I might have to actually take it apart and repair it myself because it's out of warranty.
Is your TV Mae Young?
Wow, boo.
You know, Madison Rain, she beats Gail Kim and she becomes the knockout champion. And I feel like Eddie asked last week where she was, and we guessed away, and he guessed baby. He was right. She had a baby.
No wonder she was holding her abdomen coming to the ring.
But she's been on TNA for the past few weeks now.
But she's been off TV for like 10, 11 months.
Is her baby good?
Well, that's clearly the time it takes to have a baby.
Yes.
Yeah, so it makes sense.
Karma's still off TV.
Biggest disappointment of Impact? Wolves.
Why?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Actually, I'm surprised I forgot about that. That's the
I was so bummed out about that. And you know, they come and she, you know, talks to them and they make a little WWE insider reference. And then, you know, they pass the tryout match. And then they gave Dixie contracts that they signed already. And Dixie's like, oh, I didn't give you these contracts. And they're like, oh, somebody else did. So there's a new investor and the Wolves are baby faces.
Could you? I guess. I mean, if you're in a promo with or a segment with Dixie Carter and you're not kissing her ass, I guess you kind of are a baby face.
Yeah, but she was like pushing, like, "Oh, I'll sign you guys. You guys are great, y'all." Fuck, she sounds like.
I do declare.
I just felt like they should have debuted in ring.
Absolutely. Either as a match, having an awesome match, or coming out and doing a run in after a match and just. Kicking ass or something like that. Something more impactful, no pun intended, anything would have been more impactful than what they did. And if they're just being a follic or a stepping stone into this new investor thing, that's a waste of them, I think.
Who do you think the investor is?
Jeff Jarrett.
No.
You don't think so?
Ted DiBiase.
That'd be worse.
what if it's Muda?
He's my benefactor, the $1 million man.
Have the,
oh, who could,
the deal.
Who could it be?
I think it's either Jared, where he takes, they do some goofy angle.
It's D'Lo Brown.
Wouldn't be goofy if they did an angle where he comes in and he starts his own promotion on CMT.
Oh, with Kobe Teeth?
Yeah. And eventually they take over TNA and then you just kill Impact and TNA. Jump ship the CMT, and they have a better TV deal and probably a bigger audience. And Jeff is running it instead of Dixie or who's ever running Impact.
Dude.
Did you read that anywhere? Or you just
no, I'm spitballing and guessing. You know, like no Hogan, no Bischoff. You know, who's really what's going to make an impact as a hired gun?
Al Snow,
Tommy Dreamer.
He's back there too, right?
Al Snow.
No, he's not back. He was there apparently, from what I read. For Genesis, he was there.
But, a Jarrett, a Dreamer, or, I mean, Muda.
Enough with the Muda.
But he's got the new promotion in Japan, and there's been meetings and such, so.
Hoi!
I mean, it might be interesting TV, but, I mean, nothing, could be more interesting than Sting against Ethan Carter III with Rockstar Spud as a special referee.
He's special, all right.
Yeah.
Oh, what a terrible, terrible ending to Genesis.
Yeah.
And then, like, the fucking internet exploded Thursday night after it went off the air. Next week, it's Magnus against Sting, title against contract. If you're not painting the perfect picture for WWE to swoop in and steal him, I don't know how better it could be. I mean, there's pictures.
But what's up with that? What's the actual truth to that? Like, what is it? I mean, are we gonna talk about next week now, or are we gonna?
Well, did they tape? Is next week, or is Thursday night live or taped?
Taped. They already taped it. It's already out. What happened?
Oh, really? I didn't even see the results. So I don't want to talk about it because I actually want to watch it, but like how. Now I want to ask if there's like a goofy swerve or something, but I'll just have to wait till next week and hope that our wonderful fans on Facebook don't ruin it for me.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to, I can't imagine you not figuring it out at some point.
Right.
It out, but
if you're Sting, wouldn't you just be throwing shit? There's pictures of him from like 2 weekends ago. He's in a high school gym in front of like 70 people. That's depressing. You're Sting.
Sting.
Well, Sting's got that quality, that rare gift that I'm sure we'll bring up with AJ Styles about just hanging around with the people that brought you to the dance.
Everyone that brought him to the dance is in WWE.
No, I mean, I'm saying Sting made his reputation of not towards the end of WCW and stuff like that. Sting had every opportunity to go to WWE whenever he wanted to, never did. So that's what, like, so his loyalty, I guess, was with TNA, just like it was to WCW. So he doesn't mind wrestling in the 100 people facilities or whatever.
Yeah, but I mean, even now, I mean, he's got to be like, okay, like, I'd be very surprised if he goes his whole career and he never goes to WWE.
Of course not. He's not going to go. It's over.
I don't know. I mean, if it doesn't happen this year, or I'll even say at the very latest next year, then it will never. And that's even stretching. If it doesn't happen this year, it's not happening. Except for if he ever wants to take a Hall of Fame induction.
You heard it here first, folks.
There it is. Kevin's lock of the time frame, whatever time frame it is.
So, I mean, in a nutshell, that was TNA. Genesis was a bit disappointing. And now I'm going to probably go look up the results for Thursday night's show because I won't be able to watch it because my fiance is returning from her excursion from around the world. But moving forward, Tony, you made the mistake of going to the ECP.
Well, I wouldn't call it a mistake. I had a great time.
Before you get into this, hindsight says I should have gone to the ECPW show with you because I got fucking annihilated at Rodizio. I speared a small tree and then thought it would be a great idea to ride in a shopping cart in which it flipped over and I smashed my head on the concrete.
Dummy.
Drawing blood and a nice raspberry on the back of my head.
Stupid ass.
Oh,
what?
So talking of that, episode 102, Anthony Aquadro?
Yes.
Yeah, he got pulled into his office by his principal and talked to about it.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Oh, no. No wonder he hates us.
No. No trouble. His principal was like, yeah, your name's attached to this. What is it? And he was like, yeah, my dickhead friends thought it'd be funny to name an episode after me. So when people search for me on the internet,
that fucking rules.
Feel free to text him now.
Oh my god,
Anthony is now a texter.
You know, Pat wanted to name every single episode Anthony Aquadro until that happened.
I know, it was hysterical. We actually. After we all got drunk, we went back to Pat's place and we listened to the MBW episode.
Did it get good marks?
Yeah.
Everybody liked it?
Anthony left halfway through because he's a fucking weirdo.
Was he drunk? All right.
But I digress, as you say. ECPW, please.
Well, I've been wanting to take my kid to a wrestling show for a while, so I figured the good litmus test would be one that's in the next town. So me and the little guy and my friend Steve went over to the Presbyterian Boys Club, and we checked out a fine night of ECPW wrestling. We got to meet the Creeper. I don't know if you're familiar with the Creeper, but he was like a manager of Andrew Anderson who turned good and became a wrestler. He's not in great shape, and his wrestling's a little lacking, but for pure entertainment value, there was none better. If you guys want to see that match, I believe I posted it on the Facebook page, so go check that out. It was Timothy Plasma versus the Creeper. I'm sorry if I'm stuttering a little bit. I've got an echo so bad in my ears, it's killing me. Of course, Skype's got to fuck up now. Are you guys still there?
Yeah, why?
Yeah.
No, it's just a pain in the ass. We saw Andrew Anderson wrestle. He almost dropped somebody on their head, but I don't think it was necessarily his fault. Oh, they got a gay guy that wrestles there too, and I only bring that up because you know, gay's gay. Whatever you do is your business. But this dude was over the top flamboyant, dude, like ass wiggling and twerking.
We talked about this guy before.
I forget what the fuck his name is.
But it wasn't. We brought him up and. Apparently, is he over?
No, it's not that guy. I brought up a guy that used to work for NWS with Vin. That's a different guy. This dude is just like this, like, he's like a thin, muscular black guy. Like, think of Lamar from Revenge of the Nerds. But, dude,
yeah,
like, no, I've never seen this guy before.
Okay.
Completely over the top, dude. Like, and the worst part was my kid started twerking like him. I was like, what the fuck?
You're a terrible father.
We actually had a good time, though. The Fallen Angels were there, so we got to have some fun, you know, talking with those guys. And our buddy Cancer Gideon left his cell phone alone, so I had some fun with that. Put out some requests for some unclipped ones. And that was about it. It was good times.
Very good. Very good. Good. Our friend of the show, Jamie, he went to a BWO show in Lodi on Saturday, and he wore the Shining Wizards T-shirt, and apparently a couple of the wrestlers were making fun of him, so he had to give them shit going back his way. I guess it's just good-natured ribbing, so it's always a good time.
They were giving him shit for wearing our shirt?
I guess they knew who we were, and they were busting his balls. I don't know. I wasn't there, and I really couldn't get the story out of Jamie, so...
Whatever. He was all like, "Leave me alone."
Did you guys watch Raw?
Yes.
Yes, I did.
Go home to the Royal Rumble, and boy, do they not know how to end the show.
Well, is it really a go home with SmackDown on Friday?
Yes, because I think Raw is the prominent show. Yeah. When was the last time you watched SmackDown?
Last week.
Did you really?
Yeah, I probably watched it on replay, though, on Universal.
Oh. My apologies.
Yeah, I always try to catch it like a few days later. I never watch it on Friday night, ever. But I always try to catch it. Like a few days later, YouTube will pop it up. Someone will put it up on YouTube, or if I happen to be up at 3 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, it's on UHD or whatever.
All right. Can I tell you what I took away from Raw?
Can I guess?
Okay. Go ahead.
That Batista is the end all be all of WWE for the next how many years he's there?
Pitbull.
Skinny jeans.
He looked like such a douche.
Dude, he did not look intimidated. I mean, other than being a gigantic dude, he did not look. I think I made a comment on Facebook. I was like, I liked Batista better when he was The Rock. Because that's what he came across as. And you notice how he doesn't do the sit down. He's wearing skinny jeans, so he couldn't do the sit down Batista bottom.
No, if he sat down, his fucking jeans would have ripped in half. Looks like he jumped off of a garage to get in those things. Jesus Christ. He's not a 15-year-old girl. I don't know what he's wearing them for. Holy Christ.
That's Hollywood Batista.
Hollywood Batista.
So I mean, what do we got from Raw? Give me your highlights.
Goldust and Cody Rhodes continue to be awesome.
Agreed.
Yes.
I do. I don't know if I'm in the minority, but I do enjoy the Usos.
Yes,
me too.
I think what they're doing with them in the tag team division is awesome.
Yeah, I completely agree. You look back at Raw over the last like month and a half, or how many high profile segments they've been involved in. It speaks volumes for what the company thinks of them, and what they eventually will mean to them long term. Who knows? But for at least now, the crowd's buying into them every week. The Uso chant gets louder and louder. Their affiliation with Daniel Bryan obviously doesn't hurt. So I think it's awesome what they're doing with them.
Yeah, and I think it fits, like, them getting a win over the Wyatts last night, like, it fits into the Daniel Bryan storyline and his big change. And the fact that he is concussed and he couldn't wrestle last night, the way they used him was still in a positive light. And, I mean, he's over like gangbusters. My only complaint is that they don't have him, as of right now, scheduled to be in the Royal Rumble. Which is just, I really hope they put him in.
Yeah, that that pissed me off too, because I just went to WWE.com and saw a picture of Batista in a skinny jean. Oh God, that's hysterical. Yeah, but he's the only other guy, especially after the way they ended Raw last week with him on top of the cage going nuts and the entire crowd constantly for 9, 10 minutes, whatever long it was, chanting. He's the only other believable guy that could win the Rumble, other than obviously Batista, and that's including CM Punk. Because I don't think anyone thinks CM Punk's going to win. I don't think anyone believes. Big Show's not in it. Well, not that anyone believes he would win anyway. But Brock Lesnar's not in it. Cena's not in it. So Daniel Bryan was the only other guy. And unless they do something later on to put him in this match, it'll be a shame.
Yeah, it's a real weak field in terms of the Rumble. And I can't even get like, you know, oh, Punk's announced number one. Like, ugh, all right.
Who cares?
He's been
He's
been so far removed from the main event that it's kind of like, ugh, come on. Like,
dude,
he's on the wall, Daniel Bryan. I don't care if I know it's going to happen. It needs to happen. It's what WWE needs.
CM Punk is going to be wrestling Kane at WrestleMania.
No, he's not.
He's got to be, dude.
They'll do that at the Chamber.
No, it's going to be Mania. It's going to be Kane's swan song. He's going to retire after Mania.
If I was CM Punk and they told me, hey CM Punk, we're going to have you do at the biggest pay-per-view, the highest payday ever that you can get. We're going to have you wrestle a guy who hasn't been a steady in-ring performer in about 7 or 8 months, and his name is Kane, and he is an authority figure now. And he's not Triple H, and he's not Brock Lesnar, and he's not WWE champion. I'd be furious if I was CM Punk.
I don't think I would. All right, what's the payday?
Exactly.
I think he's so far along in his career where he's done so much, where he's worked his way up, and he's so beat up, I think he just wants to get done with this contract and call it a day.
I don't think he's there yet. Otherwise, he would have just left the last time that they were trying to screw with him.
Nah, he wasn't ready to leave at that point.
I think he stayed around because he got the long title run. He got the DVD, his merch. I mean, I'm sure they paid him a shitload too. I think we're gonna get
you know, Triple H throwing all the obstacles in his way at the Rumble. Maybe a match with Kane at the Elimination Chamber, or they were both in the Elimination Chamber. And then, how do we not see, who does Triple H wrestle at WrestleMania if it's not CM Punk?
Daniel Bryan.
Nobody. He doesn't need to be at WrestleMania.
No, that, agree. We all know that, but he obviously will be.
A couple other things that I took from Raw. As much as I don't like Brock Big Show, I think if Brock's going to bump like a fucking lunatic like he did during their little encounter, I think it'll be a highly entertaining match at the Rumble.
I agree.
Something that pisses me off about the Rumble is that, again, they're featuring the tag titles in the fucking pre-show.
Who cares?
What do you mean, who cares? Go ahead, Kev.
I think it might be because all of the guys in the pre-show are also in the Royal Rumble, and that's never stopped them before from putting it actually on the main card. But I think that because they're all actually in the Rumble, they'll reference it from before on the pay-per-view. They'll do something. And again, you have to put a match of interest on the pre-show to get last-minute buys. And I think Cody Rhodes and Goldust and The Shield have all done. Oh, it's New Age Outlaws, isn't it? It's not The Shield. It's New Age Outlaws.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, New Age Outlaws don't deserve to be on the pay-per-view anyway, so I have no problem with that.
Well, in 2 months, it's not going to matter anyway. Because the pre-show is going to be $10 a month, just like WrestleMania is.
True.
So, don't be too angry for too long.
Sure. What else? Another ADR Mysterio match.
Of course, 5,001, bro.
The stupid broads.
The stupid broads.
No offense. I know we have Little Egypt on tonight. And Glow was fantastic growing up, but I mean, enough about. I don't think anyone's. Every time there's a Divas match, go and look at a Twitter feed. Bathroom break. I can't believe I'm watching this. Bathroom break.
I actually watched that match, and I'll defend Tony on this. It wasn't bad.
I don't.
No, when the women want to work, dude, they'll work.
I don't think the debate is that it's bad. I just think it's. It's a great storyline with Tamina and AJ, and I think that, you know, eventually she turns and she takes the title from AJ. But I just don't think people are interested because every single week they shove a garbage diva match down your throat that is terrible. AJ can work. The Funkadactyls, they're decent. Tamina's good. But I don't want to see the fucking Bella Twins and Eva Marie. Not unless the sloppy donkeys are hanging out.
The sloppy donkeys. What an ass.
Care about them. I really and don't.
You know what part of me thinks that is? Is that you look around around the Divas division now, and you look at they're pushing like single stars. Like they're all tag teams. Like if there was a Diva tag team division, it would be on fire right now because all the number one contenders come from a tag team. You have Naomi, who's basically going to be set up to challenge AJ, and she's a Funkadactyl. If it's not one Bella, it's another. There's no effort on pushing a single female talent. Have you guys seen that? Or?
No, I agree. And I don't know if they're trying to get away from having two diva matches on Raw because people are so uninterested in it, and they're just trying to jam everybody in a tag team, but it's really taking away from the product.
You know,
I agree. It's like you go into a match and you're like, oh, that's one of the Funkadactyls. You don't know which one it is. That's one of the Bellas.
They all look alike, right?
Like, it's just like, you know which one it is, like, by name when they say it, but, like, there's no individual personality between them. They're the same person.
LOL racism.
Oh, racism.
That was a little racist?
No, I'm teasing, bro.
No, he's being a douche.
A douche.
Before we get to our interview with Little Egypt.
Yes, please. She's on hold. She's waiting for us.
Any other tidbits?
Yeah. Billy Gunn looks like Randy the Ram. I'm an ass ram.
You know what's funny that I just stumbled across? Jake Roberts issued an apology to the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah, did you read what he texted, what he tweeted about him?
Yeah, about what? Yeah, Ultimate Warrior and Jake the Snake are going back and forth, and I wonder how much of this was WWE influence. If they want Jake the Snake to be in the Royal Rumble around the same time Ultimate Warrior is being inducted to the Hall of Fame. It's funny.
Let's finish Raw. Let's get to Egypt, and then we could take that over as soon as we come back from her interview. But they end Raw. Orton, Kofi. Orton's like paranoid. They keep showing the fucking back alleyway. When's John Cena gonna show up? I thought it was rude as fuck that he was late to work on Martin Luther King Day. First of all, so rude.
Now that was racist.
That wasn't racist.
No, it wasn't. It was racist for John Cena.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. John Cena's a racist. Allegedly.
Yes. Yeah, good call, Kev.
Allegedly.
Just the ending was awful. They fight up and outside, and John Cena gets into a car, and then douchebag one and douchebag two. Fucking Jerry Lawler is atrocious. He's an awful announcer. I don't give
a fuck
what anybody says. He should really fuck off. Him and JBL. Oh, he stole a car. Come on, you retards. Oh, he got in the passenger side. He must have stole a car. Oh, God, you're fucking retarded.
Dude, I've been saying it for years. Jerry Lawler needs to leave.
Oh, God, it was just bad. Such a bad ending to Raw.
You think he pays Vince to do commentary?
What he does.
I can't imagine he's getting paid for what he does every week. I can't.
Ugh, God. So it's just disappointing leading up to the Rumble. It was like, ugh. If you don't watch SmackDown, I mean, that's your last image before the Rumble on Sunday is a shirtless John Cena standing out in fucking 15-degree weather while Orton jumps into an SUV and drives off.
Da, 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 da.
Do you guys have anything else before we talk to Little
Egypt? No, let's talk to Little Egypt. I'm chomping at the bit over here.
Piper was just on Hogan's. Piper was just on Austin's podcast talking about possibility of him and Hogan at Mania.
Two fucking lunatics.
Piper says that he's in shape. They're just waiting on asking if Hogan is.
Austin,
I'm already in shape. My Piper says
I'm in shape Hogan. With my busted hip.
So we'll see. Yeah, let's get to Little Leisure. She's been very patient.
Piper, you son of a bitch, you're getting in the ring with Hogan. Some bitch won't get in the ring with me. That's the bottom line.
they're basically saying that Piper basically confirmed something happening between them at WrestleMania 30.
Yeah, brother loving a fire extinguisher. I love you.
At this rate, you're doing the Rob Van Dam liner.
Who, me?
Yeah, you. We got to get to Little Egypt. Let's go. Time is of the essence.
We'll be right back.
Her opponent today, Little Egypt.
I'll dance for you, then show my power. Cause in the ring I'm full of fight. I'm hotter than the Arabian Nights.
Ladies and gentlemen, on the line right now, because of the blizzard, monsoon, whatever you want to call it, Jack Frost, we are speaking to a true, and I mean a true legend in professional wrestling. She's a honored spokesperson. She's a realtor. She's a world traveler. She sold T-shirts, and you might know her as one of the original Glow Girls. Ladies and gentlemen, Little Egypt joins us tonight on the Shining Wizards Hotline. How you doing tonight, Egypt?
Really good, thank you. How are you guys?
Not too bad. I don't know if you could hear that smattering of applause in the background coming over Skype or not.
One clap. One clap. I heard it, though. I'm honored to be here, you guys.
And I just wish we were here under better conditions, but the point is we're all here now, so I think that's a testament to us wanting to speak to you tonight because, you know, we grew up around Glow. I know as a child, my Saturday mornings consisted of watching WWF Wrestling, American Gladiators, and then at noontime on PIX here on Channel 11, used to watch Glow. And, watching it growing up, you know, especially as a kid, didn't really know, much of the background story as to what went into Glow, where the girls came from. You know, we're used to seeing, you know, either NWA or WWF on TV. And the next thing you know, there's this whole new scenery. It came from Las Vegas, which I didn't even know what Las Vegas was at the time. And it's all these beautiful women, like, just beating the hell out of each other.
Extreme character profiles.
And I think that's what drew me in as a kid. I mean, uh-huh. Of course, you know, as an 11-year-old boy, who doesn't want to watch, you know, like, women throwing each other around? But you're absolutely right. I mean, one of the things that stood out about Glow was the characters. And was that something that the girls had freedom to get into, like, to develop their own characters? Or was this something that, you know, like, hey, you were given a gimmick and let's make it work?
Yeah, basically like that. The they had certain character profiles that they wanted to eventually see come to fruition. Like, for example, the Little Egypt story. I didn't necessarily want to be Little Egypt. I kind of want, you know, who doesn't want to be a heel, right? And so I'm a Jersey girl, so I wanted to be like a Jersey heel. I wanted to be like mafia princess or, you know, a thug. That was like what I was hoping to get in training. But Steve Blantz, the lead writer of Glow, and Matt Simber had a vision for like a belly dancer, but nothing really surfaced during the casting in Los Angeles. And then when the girls started dropping out due to injuries, and they had to like fill some spots real fast, and so Mount Fiji, my story real quick, Mount Fiji came into a t-shirt store where I was folding t-shirts, told me to come in and audition. And I did. And through that audition process, as I was training, Matt Simber saw me, not Matt Simber, but Steve Blunt saw me and told Matt Simber, I found our Little Egypt. And so when they approached me with the Little Egypt profile, I was like, okay, well, do you belly dance? Well, sort of, you know, like my mom taught me a little, but honestly, belly dancing is this amazing art form. So, you know, I was very insecure about my belly dancing abilities, but I tried to like put that behind me and just embrace Little Egypt. And although I didn't really know anything about Egypt, I had never traveled to Egypt. I embraced the Middle Eastern side of my heritage. My mom's Turkish from Istanbul. And so I try to just bring that into the fold. And one of the reasons why, like in my on my arm, I would have the makeup artist paint an evil eye on my arm. And that's, you know, that's from the Turkish culture. And I kind of wanted to do a shout out to that side of me. And so that's kind of what happened with Little Egypt along the way. Now, other girls, you know, there were some characters like Beastie, for example. That wasn't a character, like she never wanted to be Beastie. I mean, if you knew Beastie, she's the sweetest, gentlest, most feminine thing you've ever met. I mean, she giggles. She, you know, she enjoys, she loves her long hair. When she came into Glow, she had long hair, and just Matt had this vision of, you know, at this point, Mel Gibson and the Thunderdome was pretty popular. And so he wanted that for a character. And so she was thrown into it and then she embraced it. So some girls got to, you know, some girls were easier. Some girls had to embrace their character profiles. But regardless, we did. And they became who we were and we loved them. There's not one girl, I even talked to Beastie, she loved being Beastie. I mean, that snort, that grunting she did throughout the time that she was in Glow, she loved it. She loved it.
Yeah, that's the great thing about the characters. You said you really didn't have ideals on becoming Little Egypt. I'm just looking back. You're from Virginia. You were a Jersey girl. You lived in Jersey for a while. Mm-hmm. Your dad was a military man, so I guess you got to travel here, there, and everywhere mm-hmm. as part of a military mm-hmm. family. I have here Japan, London. You also mm-hmm. spent time in Turkey as well. Mm-hmm. No other influences from anywhere else? I mean, any other characters that you may have thought about from where you came from or... It was
thank you. I am a military brat. Shout out to everyone who's had family in the military or has grown in a military family. My dad was a Master Chief Petty Officer in the Navy. He was an E-9. We did travel a lot. That's how he met my mom. He met my mom in Turkey and married her and brought her back to New Jersey. So that was kind of a culture shock for someone coming from Turkey to end up in Paulsboro, New Jersey.
Nice.
It's a big, big culture shock, but she embraced it and she loved traveling and she drug us everywhere. Everywhere my dad was stationed, we would go out on adventures and eat crazy things. And my mom was a foodie before the word foodie even existed. I mean, we grew up, I mean, some horror stories along the way with food, and which has ruined me for the rest of my life, but mostly it was a good experience. But there had been some crazy things that my mom made us eat along the way and kind of defined my palate, if you will. But then, I feel like I do have a really broad reach with what I've been able to see. And when I have a son, he's 21 years old and he's in Cal Poly and I'm so proud of him. But one of the things that I wanted to do when I was raising him was to make sure that we traveled as a family and that I also threw everything at him and helped to define his vision on the world, our place in the world, that we have an obligation when we're here. You know, those are things that I wanted to instill in him. And I'm pretty proud. I'm very proud of him, but I only had one son and one child and that's all I was able to do. But I feel blessed. I feel really, really blessed with my upbringing.
No, and that's awesome, and I think that's a smart thing to do. To know, however many children you have, you know, like my little guy's five, and you know, we've already traveled, you know, everywhere. We've taken him to Spain a few summers. You know, we've been out to California. We're going back to Disney in a couple of months, so he's looking forward to that. Like, we just try to take him here, there, and everywhere. We actually, this past summer, flew to Barcelona, spent a couple days there, and then we drove across the northern part of Spain and stopped in like these little towns every couple hours and spent the night there. And yeah, I'm a big proponent of traveling and, you know, letting kids experience the world for themselves. You know, get a broader view of how things are around the world. But I'm digressing.
You know what? It really I think that's amazing. Like, one of the things that you're going to realize as your son gets older and he's in school and he's learning about history, he's going to be able to have a 3D imprint on what it is he's reading in the school books. Like, when my son was studying history and the Byzantine Empire and the Roman Empire and those components, he was able to understand it and embrace it and really, really enjoy the experience instead of being forced to just memorize facts.
So you traveled around the world as a military brat. I always feel uncomfortable saying that term because I don't know if people take offense to it or if they, you know, they actually live it. But you wind up selling T-shirts, and you have a meeting with Mount Fuji, and she says to you, "You should come with me and become a professional wrestler." It just seems so random and out of the blue. I mean,
it was. I had just gotten back from London. I was a barmaid in a pub. I was 19 years old, and I just, you know, I couldn't do college. I had ADD, and just like, I just was feeling like I was failing everywhere. And I was working in a T-shirt store, and you know, for whatever I was making, pennies probably, and Mount Fuji came in to have a T-shirt made with Olympia. And, you know, she is a massive woman, 350 pounds of love, and so charismatic. I mean, what you saw on television was not nearly as charismatic as she is in person. I mean, she had the most incredible fan base you can imagine. And, she looked at me at this point, you know, they're looking for girls. Probably the word went out. If you see someone you think would be a good fit, tell them to come down and talk to David McLean. And she did. She asked me to go down there. And I was like, no way. I mean, look at you and look at me. I mean, wow, I can't do that. And she said, don't worry, because I have a partner. I have a tag team partner, Little Fiji. She's your size. If she can do it, you can do it. Come on down. And I did. And then 2 weeks later, this is what's crazy, because this is not like the normal conventional glow girl story. But with me, my journey was 2 weeks in training and then live matches on television. Like, my first matches were Heavy Metal Sisters and the Housewives. I did those on the same day. And that was like 2 weeks of training. It was silly. But what was neat about the evolution of Egypt is that you can actually see her training evolve. And that's kind of fun, because they don't really that's not really documented in our industry. I mean, you really don't get to you usually see when the workers come out at a big promotion, they've already done the indies, the farm teams, you know, they've have 4 or 5 years under their belt. They've been taking bumps for a while. They get it. They got it. And then you see them, where I was just like, throw me at the wall and see if I stick.
I think out of the original group of girls, and maybe for the entire series, the only one that had any real wrestling background was Queenie, Matilda the Hun. Unless I'm mistaken.
No, I think that was it. Yeah, she was the only one that actually came from the industry, and we knew it. I mean, we were like, wow, you know, she was like a mentor to us. I mean, we knew. I was so lucky as Little Egypt that I got to wrestle her a lot. One, because of my size, and I was a good girl. She was a heel. I loved wrestling her. She was so creative, because you couldn't do a suplex off the third rope with Queenie, you know, you couldn't do that. So you had to get really creative. And that's where I think the best storylines come from, Queenie's matches.
Oh, Queenie and Matilda the Hun. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was a kid, I would just equate that in my mind to like Andre the Giant against Big John Studd. You know, I mean, it happened to be, you know, the same type of story. The two biggest people in the promotion just like wailing on each other, going at it like crazy.
I agree with you 100%. There was nothing like the buildup to the Matilda the Hun and Fiji matches. That's all. I mean, that's what we were there to do. We were there to build that. And it exploded when it happened. I mean, wow. It was amazing to just watch. They laid into each other.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. That was, you know, it wasn't a shoot. But let me tell you, it was like, wow, ladies. They were, you know, it was really, really passionate when they would go into the ring together.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you know, there's footage, of course, I'm sure if you've seen the GLOW documentary, and if you haven't, it is now available on Netflix. But if you don't have the Netflix, you can always go to Amazon or your local DVD shop, if they still have them, and pick up the documentary. But there's footage of the match, the Gestapo Billy Club match. And I remember seeing that when I was a kid on TV. And let me tell you, they pulled no punches. They beat the living hell out of each other with those things. It was, you know, there's nothing beats when there's actual emotion. And like you said, it's not that they were really out to kill each other, but I'm sure there was an agreement that said, hey, look, let's go out there. Let's make this look real and let's just, you know, go for broke. And sometimes that's the best thing to do. It actually tells the story better than any acting ever would.
Well, you know, what's interesting, too, is like when they were done, and it wasn't just that match, but they had several matches together. But when they were done, they couldn't talk to each other. They were so pissed. They were just like, oh, my God. I mean, the fight could have kept going on. They needed days to come down from those fights because it was just, it wasn't supposed to be personal. It got personal. And then they had to, like, regroup and, you know, and go, wow, that was really intense.
And of course, you and Little Fiji had a front row seat for that because a lot of times she was seconded in by Hollywood and Vine. So,
yeah,
you know, she had you guys.
Yeah, that was it was amazing. I'm so sad. You know, I'm so sad that we all have to age and that, you know, we can't keep getting in the ring and taking bumps because it's really unexplainable. I don't know if you guys have ever gone in the ring and, have you taken any bumps or just watching?
No, I actually trained for about 4 or 5 months before I had my first match, but we're talking, it was probably about, 15 years ago at this point. So I've been in the ring, I've taken bumps and, I just can't fathom. Like you said, nobody had training, and then 2 weeks later, here you are filming your first season of episodes. That
I know.
It just still boggles my mind. I mean, it took me 5 months to put together, you know, some sort of repertoire and get in there and actually have my first match. It's just crazy.
Oh my God, I know. All I can say is that that wasn't. That wasn't the typical journey of most of the GLOW girls. They had a lot more training before they showed up on air, but it was just that weird time where a lot of girls had gotten hurt towards the end of the first season and they needed to fill a gap. I might not have been cast. I'm not sure if I would have ever gotten cast as a GLOW girl in the huge casting calls or not. Maybe I would, maybe I wouldn't. I shouldn't say that because I was cast and I had a great run until I got hurt. So I guess I'm going to take that back. I'm happy that I was cast. It was one of those weird opportunities and something that I learned the rest of my life. And that is when an opportunity presents itself, take it and then figure out what you're doing later. Just have the guts to take the opportunity and because it's there for a reason. So do it and then later figure out what you're doing.
And your parents, when you come home as a young 19-year-old, just back to the States and go, Mom, Dad, I'm going to be a GLOW girl. What's that like?
Well, here's the deal. Like my mom was still in Turkey. I came back by myself to the U.S. My dad was living in New Jersey. And because I had been raised in Las Vegas, that was where my comfort level was. So when I came back to the U.S., I wanted to go to Las Vegas. My dad was living in New Jersey and he was the only call I could make. Cause at this point, this is like early, I wasn't able to really just pick up the phone and talk to my mom. So I said, hey dad, I am thinking about becoming a professional wrestler. And here's, so my family, just so you know, like we, they wrestled too, but they wrestled, collegiate style. I have two of my uncles are in the New Jersey Hall of Fame for wrestling.
Nice.
In their weight class. Yeah. Carlo Giovanetti and Joe Giovanetti. I'm so proud of them. Look it up. So wrestling in my family is something that the guys were raised on. So when I told my dad, I said, I want, you know, Dad, I have this chance to be a wrestler. It's like the Hulk Hogan style, pro style wrestling. It's going to be filmed. It's going to air all over the U.S. And I'm kind of nervous. Do you think I'm, you know, do you think I'm ruining my life? And he said, you know what? Let me tell you something, honey. He said, these opportunities don't come around very often. You're going to look back on this in 20 years and you're going to go, I got a chance to do something not a lot of women were able to do. And I was able to be part of a legacy and I was able to be part of a movement. He said, just do it. Just do it. I'm so proud of you. And I did it. And GLOW was airing in Jersey, Philly 57, because Paulsboro, South Jersey. So it was airing on Philly 57. And all my cousins, I have a huge Italian family, like we're half of Paulsboro. We take up half that town. And they ate it up. They loved it. My dad was so proud. He was getting free drinks at the bar. You know, he was getting high-fived, clapped on the back. I mean, it was great. And he still plays it up to this day. I'm really glad that I was able to give my dad something that he could continue to talk about and be proud of.
That's awesome. I love stories like that. I had a few people in my family that thought I was nuts for going into wrestling. And my cousin actually, I think it was during my first or second match, my cousin turns to my dad and he goes, yeah, that college money was well spent, hey? So
you know what? College money is always well spent, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if we turn it into a career or not. You were educated at a high level. I can't say that. I did my lesson out there in the world, and I took a different set of bumps, and I had to learn, you know, the hard way in a lot of, you know, a lot of different situations. But, you know, I hope my son later can look at whatever career he decides, and his journey through college is something that he'll be taking with him the rest of his life. So congratulations to you on that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And now I know you said some of the girls were given their gimmicks. How about in terms of stories, you know, like, I mean, obviously Mount Fiji, that's Matilda the Hun, you know, that's a natural rivalry. But when it came, but when it came to things like, I don't know, like booking the GLOW crown or making tag teams, how much leeway did the girls have doing that sort of thing?
You know what? Not much, because when we were paired for tags, it was basically what looked good. Like California Doll and Amy the Farmer's Daughter looked great together. They were the same size. They were both blonde and beautiful. Fiji and I were paired together because we were the same size. You know, so when we went in against Matilda, you know, it was pleasing to the eye in the sense there was a lot of balance. And it was mostly done that way, as far as the tag teams go. As far as who got the GLOW crown and why, originally, Tammy Jones was the first GLOW crown holder. And
absolutely.
Then, do you remember that?
Absolutely. You know what? We have some very freakish friends, and I can include myself in the group.
Mm-hmm.
There were quite a few things, especially, you know, I hate to say back in the day, but, you know, mm-hmm. when we were young and coming up, you know, everybody knew every single world champion in the NWA. Everybody knew every single WWF champion or Intercontinental champion. I honestly knew the lineage of the GLOW crown, and I'm surprised nobody has actually traced it and put it on either Wikipedia or any other website. And it just baffles me.
Well, let's hear it. Let's hear the legacy. Test your knowledge.
All right. Well, I could take you from Tammy Jones. Now, I was never too sure how she got the GLOW crown. I'm assuming
It was the pilot episode. So it was in the pilot episode against Matilda the Hun,
okay.
And never aired as part of the series.
Oh, it didn't? I seem to remember I seem to remember watching that, and that was the match where Matilda the Hun did the I Eat Raw Meat song.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tammy Jones came out, and she did her rap, and she was licking her lollipop, and, you know, she, you know, for those of you who don't know, Tammy Jones was like a, I guess like an overgrown little girl, so like she had pigtails and pajamas, and like that was her gimmick. And I remember they had a whole bunch of slow motion stuff where she was making her big comeback on Matilda, and eventually she won, and she won the crown. And I think she wound up losing it to Royal Hawaiian, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and then after Royal Hawaiian was...
It was Americana.
Uh-huh.
And then it went to Nanuchka.
Uh-huh.
And that's where I kind of start fading out with the glow crown.
Tina Ferrari.
Oh, Tina Ferrari. That's right, Tina Ferrari. I know that at some point Cheyenne Cher was champion. I know at some point Godiva was champion. I know that there was somebody else now that's slipping my mind. But yeah, after that point, it just kind of like fuzzes to me. I'm surprised
Daisy,
I remember
Daisy, I
that
think,
much.
Was a glow champion.
Yes, Daisy. I think Daisy or Godiva might have been the last glow champion, if I remember right.
I do not think Godiva ever became a glow champion.
She didn't?
I thought she was in a championship match, but I don't think she won the crown.
Then it had to have been Daisy.
I'd be wrong, and then she comes down to my house. You know, Godiva lives just like 15 minutes from me. And we hook up all the time for lunches and coffees and barbecues, and it's so fun. It's so fun. But if I mess that up, believe me, she'll be coming down my way.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. Now I know the documentary, spoke with a bunch of the girls about, you know, what their characters were, and I got to tell you, Spike and Chainsaw, man, they had me laughing. They were like, we couldn't wrestle a lick, but they let us play with chainsaws and light things on fire, and I you know, some of the gimmicks that I really got into. You know what? Let me ask you. Aside from, of course, the little Egypt gimmick, what were some of your favorites?
Well, you were going. You were talking about two of my favorites in and out of the ring were Chainsaw and Spike, because you saw them in the documentary. They're hilarious.
And I got to tell you,
hilarious.
I had no idea until I saw the documentary that they were the Housewives. No,
seriously.
Idea. No, you know what? That was more of a disappointment to me than finding out that Shock G was actually Humpty Hump in the Digital Underground. You know, the Humpty dance.
Why?
Because I just had no idea. Like, when I was a kid, I just thought, I'm like, who are these annoying women that they brought in? And then they're beating people with frying pans. They were complaining about climbing over the top rope. And one of the segments they did actually seemed to go on for like 5 minutes. And they were just babbling about anything and everything. And they were just so annoying. I'm like, why are they on my TV? But I didn't change the channel. I was watching it for some reason. I found it entertaining, I guess.
Oh my God, those two girls, what talents, what genuinely really sweet women they are. And so funny, because when we would put together matches, you know, we'd have a week and we didn't necessarily like go to the training room or anything like that. Sometimes I would like go up to their room. They were staying at the Riviera Hotel. So I would knock on their door and we'd kind of talk about how we were going to put together a match. And they had the dirtiest room. Oh my God. They never let the maid service in. It was like at a refrigerator. They weren't supposed to have a refrigerator. That their chainsaw blow torches everywhere. Curtains were drawn because they hated the neon lights. They're didn't make their beds. I think they had food in the tub as storage. I'm not even like, I was just could not believe how dirty their room was. And it was so like them to do that, because they are just, they're their own breed of funny, humorous, talented individuals. And I just adored when I got to wrestle them. And then I also loved Attaché, which, unfortunately, we haven't found her yet. She was my mentor as far as my training went. She's the one that trained me to be a wrestler. She was, we actually had, you want some behind the scenes little bits?
Of course.
So when Mondo never made it to Vegas, he was there to do the LA training for the pilot. And it's unfortunate, because it would have been awesome to have Mondo in Vegas. And somehow I think maybe inside he knew that it wasn't going to happen. So we learned the basics from Mondo. And he wanted to make sure we were safe. So a lot of the basics that we were taught were slapping out, chin to the chest, 3/4 rolls, you know, just taking really clean bumps, you know, being fearless. And the girls that got trained by him, like Attaché was one of them. She started training the end of the second season. Before her, Royal Hawaiian and Americana were trainers. And I think they were getting like $50 more a week to do the training. And so for some reason, Royal Hawaiian left the show early. Americana stopped training. And then Attaché came up to do the training. I loved her. She was such a clean wrestler. If you watch Attaché in matches, you will see technical perfection. I am such a huge fan of her and her character and everything she brought to the table. I mean, she started, you know, as the sidekick to Corporal Kelly and was able to evolve her character to the point where she was like in GLOW Championship matches, you know, or well, like leading up to GLOW Championship matches. And she deserved it.
I hated Attaché. I thought she was annoying. But I tell you this, I think she won I forget how many people. She won a battle royal. And mm-hmm. I guess part of the shtick was that David McLean was supposed to give her a check for like 10 grand or, you know, mm-hmm. typical battle. And, oh, I'm sorry, you weren't medically cleared to wrestle. I can't give you this. And she just went nuts on David McLean. So I was like, okay, that's pretty cool.
She would spit on people. You know, she just had this this tough attitude. And I just loved her. And I miss her. I wish I knew what happened to her. You know, there was over 60 girls cast. You know, the numbers skewed. Some people say closer to 100. I think it was closer to a little over 60 girls cast for the show over the four seasons. And we found somewhere around like 40, a little over 40. Unfortunately, Attaché is one that's still missing. We still don't know about Spanish Red. I get asked these questions all the time. Like,
okay,
I'm hiding that information. Like, I'm only going to talk about the girls that I want to talk about. No, I would love to talk about Spanish Red and Attaché and girls that made an impact on the show, and we just don't know where they're at. I mean, Tammy Jones, we don't know what happened to her, and you know, and it's just sad. It's sad because we have a sisterhood now and we want to embrace each other and we want to share that. We want to share our memories with each other. I mean, we want to reunite again. So I am not done looking. In the GLOW documentary, I ended up being a coordinating producer on that documentary. I was on it from the beginning. I was one of the first girls interviewed. And when I got asked to do the interview, there was only like six girls that were around that the documentary guys knew of. And I was just so passionate about this story being told authentically, you know, like I didn't want the story to be told by six girls with only one of them from season one. You know, it seemed off. It seemed like we needed to balance that. So I went on a hunt for the GLOW girls, and it took 2.5 years to get to that point where you saw the end of the documentary. That was a 2.5 year journey.
Yeah, it was.
Tony. For those of you out there, the GLOW, the story, Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, GLOWTheMovie.com. You can check it out on iTunes, Amazon, Netflix. The whole process of the documentary, whose idea was that? Because it seemed like it was something that was long overdue.
Yeah. We were so thankful when two guys in Houston, Texas, Brad and Brett, were two young documentarians who had just finished like a documentary, and they were looking to do another one. And they liked to do pieces on quirky, nostalgic, what happened to pieces. And so they were going through YouTube, and they used to watch GLOW growing up, and somehow they came across a YouTube video of one of the matches. And then they were like, yeah, what did happen to the GLOW girls? And they kept looking around and they saw videos, but there was no story there. They were like, the story ended. And so they hooked up with Babe, the farmer's daughter, who at this point has the trademark to the GLOW name, not our characters or anything like that, but the episodes that she has and the ability to use the GLOW trademark in future endeavors. She has that ability. So they reached out to her, and asked her if they could do a documentary, and she said absolutely. And thank God she had my number. I had called her just 3 months prior, because now at this point, people are telling me I'm on YouTube, and I didn't realize it. They're like, oh, we saw your matches on YouTube. And I started looking around, and I'm like, dang, I guess, holy cow. Yes, I'm on YouTube. And so I thought, let me get a collection of my work so that I have something to give Jacob, my son, you know, later. He can laugh about it. You know, he can show his kids and his grandkids, you know, like what his crazy great grandma did or his great grandma did. So that being said, I reached out to Babe looking for my tapes. She didn't have them because they're split up right now. Matt Simber has the collection of the Glow tapes. She has about 9 shows. And so I did get the ones I could. She had my contact information. And when the doc guys were coming into LA, she called me. And when I heard Matilda was going to be there in Hollywood, I was like, I'm there. I drove from Las Vegas to LA to give my interview. That's when I saw Matilda in her wheelchair. And I heard, like, right there on the spot, you know, I'm like, I found out Fiji's in a nursing home. And, you know, that's where it got emotional for me in my interview, because it was just like, are you kidding me? Where is everybody? What just happened? I had a great life. What happened? Where is everybody? There has to be good stories here. And I went on a quest to find those stories. And that's what I did. I did that just out of the love and passion for the girls that were involved in the show. Happy to do it.
Absolutely. And what do the documentarians say when all of a sudden they have you and you're like, no, we need to talk to everybody? I mean, were they taken aback by that, or were they just like,
No, they were thrilled, because they were not getting anywhere. I mean, very, very difficult if you're not in the inner circle to track these girls down, because when I would make a phone call, it was the girls would pick up, you know. Otherwise, the girls didn't know if you were a mark. I mean, they were tracked down by fans for years, you know. They're trying to live their lives. But when I called and said, hey, it's Little Egypt from season 1 and 2. We've never met, but I'd love to chat with you. I've got some information about all the girls. Give me a call. They called right away. And then it seemed like each girl knew where one other girl was. Not all of them, but just like one more. And I was able to just kind of continue that journey and slowly, methodically find the girls that you saw in the documentary. I was working hand in hand with Brett and Brad as one would come up, you know, like the Ninochka interview in the documentary was the tail end. Just as we were doing like final edits, we found Ninochka. And didn't she bring a lot to the table?
Oh, I'm so glad you found her. She was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, and she played, I mean, she's one of the only girls that went all 4 seasons.
Yeah, and didn't she also do some of the other organizational work that David McLean had? I thought I remember her going off to POW or one of his other groups.
No, she didn't. She stayed there, and do you want to know why she stayed there?
Why is that?
Okay, because her mom was the woman that was making all of our costumes.
Ah.
She owned a store called That's So Biz. And she was a costume designer for like the Follies Bergère and some of the other high-end shows going on the Strip. And when Glow came to Las Vegas, they connected with her, and she was hands-on with a lot of the costuming. And Ninochka started just assisting her mom in the costuming part of Glow. And then she was like, man, I really want to do this. I want to be a Glow girl. She's a classically trained dancer. She started dancing professionally at the age of 14. I mean, one of the reasons why she is so beautiful to watch in the ring with her posture, the way she follows through on a move, is because of those years of dance training. I mean, look at her. You've seen her work. It's beautiful.
No.
Technically, very beautiful wrestler.
Yeah, no arguments here on that. To take you back real quick, you mentioned Spanish Red, and honestly, when I first saw the documentary, she was the first one that popped into my mind. I really liked the character. Mm. I liked that she was really the first Glow girl that turned. You know, she was always fighting Americana, and then she wound up, you know, being on the same side as her. It's unfortunate.
Just at the end. I'm sorry. At the end of this, towards the end of the second season, you're talking about, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She's one of the ones that I was a little disappointed that you guys, you know, I'm sure there's others like, yeah, she was one that I noticed a lot of people ask about her.
Yeah, well, she made such a huge impact. One, because she was so passionate as a wrestler. I mean, all right, so I'm going to take a step back.
Okay.
As a worker that had to, like, be there, she had two totally different personalities. Like, as someone who wasn't in the ring, the sweetest, feminine, gentle, kind, loving, affectionate woman. And you were just like, oh, my gosh, she's so sweet. And then when she went in the ring, holy cow, she didn't stick to anything. It frustrated so many of the girls because, you know, we weren't coming, you know, we didn't call it in the ring. Okay. We were nowhere near, that level of training that we could actually call things in the ring. No way. And so we needed to know where we were going to be, what move was coming in next. And she would veer off that. And when she pulled your hair, she pulled it harder than you were supposed, you know, you're supposed to pull your hair towards the scalp, so that your hair doesn't fall out. And, you know, she would, you know, she just loved to put her crotch in your face, and none of the girls like that. I'm like, where did that come from? Like, that's like dominant. Yeah, it was just like she turned into like a dominatrix crazy. You can see it in her matches. Like, I didn't want to wrestle her. I was so glad. I thought for sure I was going to be next on the list. It was just like, they didn't see the Egypt Spanish red combo yet, so that was coming. And I was, and just from everything everyone was telling me, it was just like, oh no, I hope to God I never have to wrestle her. And I got hurt before I had to. So anyway, that's an interesting component to Spanish Red's, you know, what Spanish Red was doing behind the scenes. She was a great person, very caring and loving in the ring, off script, off task, off mark, and total, you know, I'm going to kill you. You know, you really were, it's like a fight to the death. It was like a shoot. It was like, what just happened? It turned into a shoot so fast.
That could probably be why she was so, you know, beloved, and so many people are, you know, especially with her, wonder what happened to her.
Yeah.
The other person I always wondered about was Vine. Growing up, my best friend Jason loved Hollywood, couldn't contain himself about Hollywood. But I'm like, yeah, she's pretty, but I'm a Vine guy myself. I really liked her. Oh, there's a few on the short list that I liked, and yeah, Vine was definitely one of them. No whereabouts for her either, huh?
Did you know Vine was Princess of Darkness? Did you know that?
Yeah, yes, I did.
Okay.
That I knew.
Yeah.
The Housewives, I didn't know. I guess it was the makeup.
Okay. Yeah, there was a lot of things going on where we were picking up double characters. Like, in the originally, Sarah and Mabel were played by Royal Hawaiian and Ashley.
That they I had no first. Idea.
Yeah, that was the first. And then eventually Dementia took on that role later when Dementia came into the second. There were two Dementias, but the Dementia I worked with came in at the end of the second season, and she picked up that. And she also worked as Sugar. Do you remember Sugar? She came with the big blonde hairdo and the pink tights.
No, Sugar. The only blonde that I remember in tights was Tara the Southern Belle, the one that wore pink.
Yeah, no, it was like one of those bathing suit kind of things. And so if you go back and look through some of the Glow footage and look for Sugar, she didn't have that many matches, but she did the Dementia Stomp, which drove Matt crazy. He would just be, what are you doing? You're not Dementia, you're Sugar. And it was just, she couldn't, because she was Dementia for so long, she couldn't break that. So there was a lot of trouble switching for some of the girls. But with Vine, she was a pro trainer before she got with Glow. She was in great shape, and she was from Canada, and we've been looking for her. And there have been people with fake profiles on Glow claiming that they're her. And then I would, one time I reached out to one and asked a very, I asked a question that only Vine would know, and they didn't have the answer for it. And then I showed it to Hollywood, and she was like, that is such a lie. That is so not her. And then we try and do what we can to say, like, look, if you're looking for the glow girls and you want to connect with the ones that are real, that have the real profiles, go to my official page of Little Egypt or go to my profile, Glow as my first name. Little Egypt is my second name. And go to the notes section. And I have notes that are, you know, links of all the glow girls on Facebook, links to all the glow girls on Twitter. I make it really easy. I mean, I want you to connect with the real deal. I mean, I want you to find the real girls. And so if it's not on my page, it doesn't exist. I am fanatic about that.
That's absolutely awesome. I think it's great that, you know, this documentary was actually able to bring all the girls back into the spotlight and, you know, mm-hmm. give credit where credit's due, because, you know, it Glow, as you know, so many people know it, but a lot of people don't realize it was only around for 4 seasons and then it just, you know, mm-hmm. disappeared. And I think one of the most disheartening things that I heard that all the stuff just wound up in a dumpster somewhere.
It was horrible. The girls left after season 4, you know, and they were on their break. So a lot of girls went back to California. Everyone thought they were going to get called in for a season 5. No one got called in for a season 5. And Daisy, her and her husband, I don't know what they were doing at that point, but she took the stuff to the dumpster. She was like, I'm throwing away this stuff. I cannot believe this. This is because she was instructed to throw away the stuff in the dumpster. And she did. And it was fan letters and it was costumes and it was sets. And the only reason we have what we have is because we happened to take it with us. Like when I left Glow, I had my costumes with me. When Tina left Glow, she was the last Glow champion. She's got the last Glow crown. She took it with her. You know, she's got her boots. She has her boa. She has all that because she took it with her. And if you left it there and you forgot or you thought you were going to go back and get it, a lot of that stuff was gone.
That's the documentary just how much really went into the demise of Glow was Pia Zadora's fault.
Oh well, that was. That
I mean,
was
it
like
sounds
a,
like a loaded question, but that seems where everybody puts the blame. I mean, I don't know. I wasn't there.
Well, yeah, we don't want to say like Pia Zadora blew it for all of us because she didn't. She was married to a guy who couldn't keep his pecker in his pants. I frankly don't blame her.
I didn't have any real subtle way to get there. That's why I mentioned her name.
But really, I mean, she was just fed up. And if you think it's one Glow Girl in particular, it wasn't.
Oh,
it
no.
was a slew of Glow Girls. And that a lot of what I didn't like about Glow was that there were some girls that were getting like, you know, they were in matches maybe they shouldn't have been, and they were getting accolades that some of the girls thought that they earned where other girls were gotten. And it just didn't, you know, not that it played out at a real high level. I just don't like that. I wasn't playing that game. So because I wasn't playing that game, I was like mad that, you know, that the game was being played because I didn't think it was fair. So that's that.
So I take it at some point the sisterhood wasn't really too sisterly. I mean, does the feeling amongst the girls go like either you're, you know, having relations with this guy or you're not? I mean, is there some sort of divide or is everybody just like, this is business as usual. Let's just do what we do.
Well, and frankly, it wasn't just, you know, it wasn't just Rickless. It was men in the production side of it too. Okay, so like, let's be. I don't want to say just the girls that were with Rickless screwed it for everybody. I mean, there were, it was just some girls had aspirations for different things. Some girls were involved for the right reasons because they really found certain people attractive and they wanted to have relationships and build relationships with people. And that was all fine and good. And then there were some that were chasing a different dream that were also using the same system. And that's unfortunate, but that's not our Glow story. And 20 years later, that's not what we talk about. What we talk about is what we built together, the legacy that we built, the impact we had on female wrestling, the transition of female wrestling from exhibition style to the divas and the knockouts that you see today. And if you take Glow out of that formula, it doesn't even make sense. But if you put Glow in the formula, then that's what I'm preserving. I'm preserving the legacy of Glow. I have nothing to do with the brand, the trademark. Everything I've done from my heart for the right reasons, because I feel I'm a voice for the women. Somehow along the road, I became the voice for the women. I've been kind of the unofficial spokesperson of Glow and the official spokesperson of the Glow documentary. And that's something that I am really proud of and I'm very protective against. Like I am, I want our legacy to be remembered not as catty women or, different paths that we might have taken. I want our work to be looked at as what we did from 1989 to 1992. And I want that to be considered part of our wrestling history, our wrestling legacy. And finally now, because of the Glow documentary, I thank these guys so much. You have no idea. But thankfully, because of the Glow documentary, we have, we are finally getting the accolades, and it's not coming from the big promotions, because frankly, the big promotions don't care because we weren't part of their legacy. So I get that, right? I get it. But what I really love is that the legends are coming out and they're saying this was important and it was awesome and it does deserve to be recognized as wrestling and it does contribute to character development. And these girls did take bumps and those bumps did count. And we loved wrestling. And as far as we were concerned, we were wrestlers. I mean, you can say it was a vampy, catty, vaudevillian type show. Fine. But those bumps were real and we loved it. And that's what I'm protecting.
And you've been associated for a few years now with the Cauliflower Alley Club. And I know that you've spoken to a lot of the men that have come through there. And like you said, they've all given credit where credit's due. And I think that's something that, especially these days with WWE now starting their network and being involved, like having footage from WCW and Mid-South and all these, World Class and all these other promotions, I would think that it would just make sense for them, to be involved with Glow and, maybe try to acquire the footage or work something out where they can put something together. Because like you said, not only women's wrestling, but wrestling as a whole, Glow was an integral part. It said, hey, we're serious, we're wrestlers, but we're not too serious. We're the place where people can, settle their differences in the ring, but have fun with the characters and have fun, portraying the characters, on a weekly television show.
I really appreciate that. And it sounds so much easier than it really is because Matt Simber has the bulk of the footage and Babe has the trademark. And so Matt can't release the footage with the Glow trademark, which no one would, it doesn't make sense. It's not going to have the same appeal to the audience.
Yeah.
And Matt and Babe can't seem to get along long enough to come to terms financially on putting together any type of, agreement on launching the DVD, the DVD box set. So we've been at an impasse for, maybe over 15 years. So that's not going anywhere.
We need to lock them in a room and tell them to put everything aside and just get it together. I mean, look.
Seriously, I would love nothing more than to be a fly on the wall. And honestly, there's reasons why there's fault on both sides. Without a doubt.
And we on the show, we're pro. Pro wrestling. That sounds silly, but we always push. We always have. We don't speak to like the legends, but we speak to up and coming guys as well. And our big push is support independent wrestling. Support wrestling in your hometown, wherever it is, wherever it's at. Give something back to the guys, whether it's buying a ticket or buying a T-shirt or buying a DVD. I'm telling you right now, the day that box set comes out, I'm just writing a check and I'm not filling in the amount. And I'm just saying here, whatever it takes, I'm in.
Because you're so awesome. Thank you. In the interim, please buy the Glow DVD, because let me tell you what's on that.
Okay.
Okay, so we know that the Glow, the story of the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, is streaming on Netflix, and thank God, because now it has such a broader reach. I'm so thankful for, like, the ratings that it's getting and the acclaim that it's getting. The DVD itself, though, has a bonus reel, which has a commentary reel done by Billy Corgan, who's the lead singer of the Smashing Pumpkins.
Yep.
Me, Hollywood, and Queenie. The volume's turned down, and we're talking over it. And we give you such a good insight on what happened with David McClain, what happened with Matt Simber, a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. It fills in the gaps of the documentary perfectly. I mean, honestly, that's the missing link to the Glow documentary if you have any other questions. And then a lot of bonus features that didn't make it into the documentary because of the time component, but we've got some great stuff on the bonus reel too.
I know there's been a couple of a couple of women's groups that have tried to start off, since Glow. And I don't mean like Shimmer, Shine. I mean more of like, that tried to be true to Glow. I know that, Women of Wrestling, David McClain's second promotion, WOW. Well, I shouldn't say second promotion, but, his next venture. There was WOW. There was also an attempted revival a few years ago for Glow, and they were touting that there was going to be a season 5, and they were bringing in some of some of the independent, some of the younger girls, but also bringing in, I guess, I hate to use the word legends, but I guess the legends of Glow, if you want to call it that. Were you involved in any of this stuff or?
No, I wasn't involved. I was against the whole project, and I really tried to get the girls not to do that work because it wasn't legitimate.
Yeah, season 5
was not legitimate.
From what I've read and what I've been able to find on it, it's everything just sounded awful. It really did.
Imagine the worst promoter that would be in the industry. And, this is an industry where we have some crazy, disgusting promoters.
Oh, you don't have
imagine
to tell us twice.
Imagine that, working every angle of a promotion with just playing and feeding off of, what these women wanted to hear and what they thought was coming their way. And despite several, Matt Simber and I aligned ourselves. It's crazy. This was like when this was going on, Matt Simber and I were like, okay, here's what we got. And this is what we know. And this is what we found out. Let's tell the girls who's going to, and all this stuff was going on because it wasn't right. It just was not right. And the girls don't want to really talk about it because it's something that they're not, they don't want to call any more attention to, but there was never going to be a Glow season 5. And that person that was trying to launch it is no longer in the scene. So
we're
thankful for that.
Yeah, I'm kind of happy about that. Anytime, that I hear revival, the biggest revival that people look forward to is the ECW return. And, for a while it was great, but then that fell by the wayside. And I think people would be into a Glow return, which is why I think, the documentary and your efforts to pull everything together is such a breath of fresh air. And it opens up a whole new, contingency of wrestling fans to a little bit of history that maybe some people might have overlooked, me not being one of them, because like I told you, growing up, Glow was part of my Saturday routine, and it wasn't even like a creeper kind of pervy thing. It was just, I love the characters. I love the women, and they were beating the hell out of each other in a pink ring with Fabergé in the middle. What more could you ask for? It was fantastic.
Well, it was fantastic. And it was designed to be a kid's show. This was designed to be a kid's show. And I loved that. I loved that because our biggest fans, when we would go on tour, we didn't go on tour very often, but at the end of season 2, there was a small circuit that we did, and the kids were the best part. And the kids that lined up on match day, for our live tapings. Oh God, that was like the only time I was like excited to be a good girl because I could hug them. I could kiss them. I could sign my autographs. Chainsaw and Spike couldn't talk. They had to be all mean and couldn't give their signature. And it was so fun because they were really scared. They were really scared of the bad girls, and they really loved the good girls. And it was perfect. It was magic.
That's so awesome that that you guys had to play it in character. That's fascinating. Even in the documentary where it's like the good girls couldn't talk to the bad girls, like kayfabe was still alive and well in GLOW.
And it was still alive and well in the industry to the point where like we were like thinking, oh my God, just how far are we pushing this envelope? Because are the workers in the bigger promotions, they're going to kill us. They will kill us because we are threatening. You know, we're threatening kayfabe, actually, if you kind of think about it. We were practicing kayfabe, but in a way, we were making, you know, we were turning wrestling on its head to make it vampy and campy and fun and comic. Putting that comedic element in there was not something that the WWF was doing. So it was like we were scared, but it's fine. I did the Steve Austin show. He had me on his podcast, and I'd like to give a shout out to Steve Austin.
I was just going to get there before we wrap up. I was going to ask you, like, you guys seem to hit it off quite well. I know you did the Redneck Island after show. You were on his podcast. You know, you're out and about, which I find amazing. Amazing.
I'm sorry. What was that? I'm what?
You're amazing. I mean, like,
oh.
I would have never, honestly, like, I don't really listen to the Steve Austin show. We have so much going on with our mm-hmm. little, you know, humble network that we put together that I actually made sure I tuned in for that show. And just the two of you together, the chemistry was just hilarious. I really enjoyed the whole thing. When Steve started singing the GLOW theme, I almost fell out of my chair.
Can you believe that? Can you believe that? He sung it twice. He sung it on the Steve Austin podcast. And then if you tune in to the YouTube, if you just put in AfterBuzz TV Steve Austin, I mean, I actually took out the clip. It's 24 seconds of him singing the GLOW rap on the AfterBuzz network. And I thought, damn, this is so awesome. Because here's this guy, right? He's, you know, undisputedly the highest income earner in WWE history, right?
Yes, yeah.
He's, you know, he owned the 90s. There was no bigger wrestler than Steve Austin. I mean, they have documentaries just on him. And here's this guy that says, yeah, I watched GLOW. I'm not embarrassed about it. I loved it. I was a fan. And then he could tell you who he loved. I mean, he could tell you what characters, you know, he looked forward to seeing. And he did sing the rap. And that means he did watch it all 4 years. And I got to tell you, when that happened, there was a shift in the mindset of this industry that it's okay to say that you love GLOW. I mean, you're not putting other promotions down. You're just acknowledging the fact that we were there, that we played a part, that there was probably no better example of character development in a show than GLOW, the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling.
Absolutely not. And like I said, it's fantastic now that GLOW's finally getting the recognition it deserves. If you guys want to learn more about GLOW, or if you want to follow the career, the post-GLOW career, I guess, of Little Egypt, you can follow her on Twitter, at Little Egypt. She's on Facebook. It's facebook.com/theofficialpage of Little Egypt. I know it's wordy, but it's worth it. Search her out and get on that page. She's also on YouTube. She's got some great stuff on there. There's actually a Little Egypt fan page on YouTube. I'm sure you're familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
You also have a YouTube channel under your not Little Egypt name.
Yeah, Angelina Altician. Yeah, that's where I put a lot of the AfterBuzz stuff on there. And I'm trying to like put some behind the scenes stuff. I've got some stuff I want to put up on that channel. So be sure to subscribe to it so that as I thumb, because I have some really nice things with Big Bad Mama. She passed away last year. And, you know, it's just, I want to do it in my own time when it feels right. And so just subscribe to the channel and eventually you're going to see some really wonderful things surface.
That's awesome. Egypt, this has been a pleasure. I'm so glad that we were able to pull this off tonight, you know, considering the blizzard, you know, circumstances that we have going on here in your favorite garden state. We need to do this again. This was a lot of fun. I think there's a whole part two. I think we just scratched the surface with not only GLOW, but, you know, finding out about yourself and letting people know where you are and where you've been since GLOW. So,
but, you know, I have to tell you, like, there were other hosts on this call, and we didn't get to talk to him. What happened there?
You know
Where's
what?
Matt? Where's
you know,
Kevin?
I,
what the hell?
I honestly told them. I said, you know, this one's me. I'm the glow guy. I know where I'm going. I mean, you know, Matt tried to jump in, and I appreciated that. But
just because you didn't hear, this is Kevin.
Hi, Kevin.
How are you? You didn't hear a peep from me tonight, but that does not mean that I was not. I'm actually in my laundry room on the edge of a folding chair with my phone to my ear and listen to every word. And this is actually an education for me. So who did not grow up with a whole lot of experience in GLOW. So this was an absolute treat for me. And thank God Tony knew everything about the entire history of the company.
Well, you know what, Kevin? I love when guys like you come into the fold and try and are discovering GLOW for the first time, because it's a chance to fall in love with GLOW all over again, and it's just a chance to reconnect and be able to, you know, just get a shout out from you guys. It means a lot to us. So, thanks, Kevin.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Egypt, thank you so much once again. And like I said, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, we need to have you back on sooner rather than later so we can keep going.
Oh, sure. I'm excited to do it. Thank you. Anytime, you guys, just give me a call.
That's awesome. Have a great night.
You too. Thanks.
This is Veda Scott, and you're listening to the Shining Wizards podcast.
What a great interview with Little Egypt. Guys, please, if you're not familiar with GLOW, get out there. GLOWthemovie.com. Streaming on Netflix. If you have Netflix, it's a great watch, especially if you're snowed in. I know Tony's kid got his school canceled already tomorrow. I'm hoping I don't have to go to work tomorrow. And I'm sure, Kevin, anything? No work tomorrow?
Yeah, I got a show tomorrow night, so hopefully all the roads.
That's during the evening. All afternoon. GLOWthemovie.com, YouTube, Netflix, iTunes, Amazon. Go. Check it out. It's an awesome story. It's what you need to know. Follow her on her Twitter at Little Egypt. She's very friendly. She's very active in the Twitter universe. Matt speaks like a retard. Take two. So support her and everything she does. You guys have any other news, notes, anything worth noting before we jump into this AJ Styles interview?
No.
No, I don't think so.
Nothing, huh? Very slow week, I guess.
Well, Mae Young died, and I just want to say the video that they put together for her was actually kind of nice. I kind of felt bad.
Yeah, the show was awesomely nice. They do very good work when they actually care about stuff.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. She really put a lot of smile on a lot of people's faces, and she definitely left her impact.
And they showed her taking the Bubba Bomb off the fucking stage, which was sick.
Yeah, that's really her big moment.
Although they didn't show her taking her top off yelling, "Who wants to see puppies?"
We're saving that for the network.
God damn. Mae Young was awesome.
Well, with that said, let's segue from Mae Young into the phenomenal one, AJ Styles. We had a wonderful opportunity to get him on the show, and we jumped at that chance. So, ladies and gentlemen,
stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Rea, from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast, and you're listening to the Shining Wizards Podcast, only on the Shining Wizards Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight joining us on the Shining Wizards Hotline, he's the phenomenal one. He may be the most talented wrestler out there these days. He is the one, the only, AJ Styles. Mr. Styles, how are you tonight?
I'm good, man. Doing well.
How's no snow in Georgia?
You know what? There were some flurries today, but it's not cold enough for it to stick, so that it doesn't do us any good. I'm still going to have to take the kids to school in the morning. Sucks.
You know what? I think I would rather take the kids to school in the morning than have to shovel 12 inches of snow.
Here's the great thing about Georgia. If it does snow, it's not going to be a lot of snow, but we panic when there is snow, so nobody goes to school and everybody gets bread and water from the grocery store. That's just not water, milk, but you know, everybody goes into panic mode, which is awesome.
I can't even up here. It's unbelievable. I can't fathom the minute
we don't have the equipment to put up with snow, so we don't put up with it at all, and everybody just is out of school. There you go. You guys maybe should just move down here and you don't have to worry about shoveling snow.
I'm a Mets fan. I can't go into Braves country.
The pollen's terrible in the summer and stuff like that, but that's it.
Well, enough about our geographical locations.
Well, I mean, listen, you got all the four seasons down here, and you don't have to worry about the worst thing, which is the snow. Humidity, yeah, you're going to have to worry about that. But then again, you know, if you're working out, it's a good thing because you sweat all these calories. It's awesome. I'll take it.
Sounds like a fair deal to me.
Basically, what I'm saying is Georgia is probably the best place to live in the United States of America.
In all America, Georgia?
Northeast Georgia.
All right. Fair enough. So you've recently departed from TNA. What's life like without being involved with TNA? I mean, that must be a complete culture shock for you being with them since practically day one.
Yeah, and if I get through this interview when I talk about TNA without saying all of us will be lucky because it is a culture shock. It's just different. You know, it's been 11 years, and while that may not seem like a long time to some people, it's forever in the wrestling business. But, you know, I'm having fun, man, and I'm learning a lot of things about, you know, actually going back to the independents, man, and getting to see some newer talent. Wow, there is some good guys, you know, good wrestlers out there. So it's awesome. I like it.
You mentioned the independent level and the level of talent out there. I mean, if you go through your upcoming events, I mean, it's a who's who of awesome independent wrestlers. I know this Sunday you'll be in Canada for Smash Wrestling taking on Chris Hero. You'll be over here in Jersey for the CZW 15th anniversary show against Drew Gulak. For you, you're going from, you know, a level where it's Samoa Joe and Kurt Angle. Do you feel like these guys work hard because they're on the indie scene, they're trying to make a name for themselves, and they're getting in the ring with a man of your caliber?
Well, I think that most of these guys, they get in the ring and they work hard, not just to get to the next level, but because they love what they do. They have a passion for what they do. And that's how you're going to succeed. You got to have a passion for it. That's how you're going to, you know, get the success in the wrestling business that you're looking for. You got to have a passion. You got to be able to humble yourself to, you know, if somebody, a veteran wants to, you know, help you out and tell you some stuff, soak it in like a sponge. And, you know, a lot of people aren't too good with doing that. You know, sometimes they think they know everything. And you can't grow that way. You'll get stagnant, and you won't make it to the next level. But for those who want to learn and have a passion for this business, I don't think there's anything that can stop you. I really don't. And I think there's a lot of guys that, you know, when I was coming up, you know, there were a lot of guys like that. And that's why you're seeing them at the next level. But I think there's tons of guys, you know, on the independent scene that have that same passion that I do.
Now you mentioned coming up there were guys with that passion. Do you see that same passion in the newer generation, I want to say, of independent wrestling? I know it's a lot has changed in 11 years in terms of the up-and-coming guys. It seems like when you were coming up, there was the era of, you know, the Attitude Era, and it kind of seemed like a lot of guys were doing the drinking and the smoking and the partying. And then as you progressed into the 2000s, it seemed like a lot of the guys were more focused on the healthy eating, the getting their sleep, taking care of themselves. You go into a locker room now. I mean, is it a change for you when you see all this?
I mean, not real. I mean, this is the way I came up. You know, I wasn't around some of the older guys. You know, who did do the drinking, the smoking, and partying all night. Sure, I mean, every once in a while that happened. But a lot of times, if you come to our locker room, you may see some guys, you know, getting out their protein shakes and stuff like that. And just like you said, eating healthy and you know, just trying to, you know, stay healthy so they can get ready for the next day. You may see some video games out, you know. A lot of the old school guys, they don't like to see that. What happened, you know? Well, you know, we got smarter. You know, maybe they did some of these drugs or whatever they need to do because they didn't have video games. I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, I don't think that, you know, you're going to have the same problems with veterans or, you know, or older guys who were in the business years and years and years ago dying after pro wrestling. I think that you're going to see a lot more guys getting into different things, acting and whatnot, because, you know, that's just the way they are. They're just healthy people, and they want to, you know, they didn't kill themselves, you know, in the wrestling business, you know. And don't get me wrong, it's still tough being in the business, but it's behind-the-scenes stuff where, you know, we're going to the gym every day. We're eating right. And we're doing the stuff to keep us alive after wrestling, that we don't get bored with ourselves. There's always something to do, some way we can better ourselves.
Now, you mentioned video games, and I did a lot of research prior to this interview. And something that caught my eye is that you are a video game buff. And I think a few of us on the podcast are in the same boat. Virtual pro wrestling, your favorite wrestling video game?
It is the best wrestling game out there. If you haven't played it, you got to get it, and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
Wait, AJ, and, you know, virtual yes. Virtual pro wrestling or virtual pro wrestling 2?
Virtual pro wrestling 2.
Oh, that's good.
That game rules.
Yeah, I don't even play virtual pro wrestling, so I don't even know. But I know that 2, by far, has the most characters and exactly the same play control as the same engine, has No Mercy, WrestleMania, NWO versus WCW, you know, that whole thing. So if that's what you grew up playing, which I did, then you're going to love this game.
I'm so glad you brought that game up, because I've been playing that game for, I'll say, about 15 years now, or whenever it came out, whenever it first came out, because we started playing Virtual Pro Wrestling 1 first, and then, of course, when Virtual 2 came out, we played it. And every year, my buddy who lives in Japan now, he comes home to New Jersey every year, and every year we make it a point to spend the entire night playing 5-on-5 elimination Virtual Pro Wrestling 2 matches. And it's something that we've been doing as a tradition for 5 years now.
Well, I can tell you, as I'm looking at the back of the game, it either came out in 96, 90, or 97, or 95. It's one of those. So
okay.
I'm literally looking at the game right now.
Since then, because you had to get the Japanese adapter to put in the N64, the American
Not exactly.
Version.
All you have to do is cut the back for it to fit.
Yeah, but none of us are, which is what none of us are that intelligent.
Speak for yourself.
Well, nevertheless, you got a hold of a great game, and that's the bottom line.
Oh, yeah. All right, so we just, as Tony says, we digress.
What the? Is everything okay? What was that ruckus?
That was basically me telling me, my son's friend that his dad is outside. So, yeah.
Very good.
That's my life.
No,
I'm a dad. Picked him up from basketball practice, and he came to the house with me.
Very good.
Real life of AJ Styles.
We get it all here on the Shining Wizards podcast.
We sure do.
It's not just wrestling talk. So you leave TNA. That separation for you, I mean, was it personal? A lot of the internet dirt sheets were reporting that they offered you, and I don't know if you're comfortable talking about this, but they offered you a lot less than what your original contract was. Was that kind of like a slap in the face for you? Considering, I mean, you were dubbed Mr. TNA.
Wow. I'm so sorry, guys. It's in my truck. Again, you got to put up with dad here. But let me answer your question as far as the contract goes. It was less than what I was getting paid. I didn't ask for more than what I was getting paid. I just asked for the same, which I didn't get. Now, I'm willing to work out something and was willing to and trying to, you know, with this new contract. If they're hurting, I understand that. The problem with that is that I didn't put them in that situation. I did everything possible to help them out. And it just didn't work out. I think there's certain things that, you know, I felt like I wasn't important to some degree. That maybe they thought other guys were more important. And maybe I'm being cocky in saying that, but I did exactly what they told me. I never got in trouble. I busted my tail for 11 years for them. I mean, I have been their guy, you know, whether they put me at the top or put me at the bottom, you know, I was known as the TNA guy. So it was just one of those things, man, where I just feel like, you know, why would they wait to the last second to work this thing out? And then the communication in between then just wasn't quick enough for me. And I had to make a decision because I don't have a contract there. So I'm not making money, and I don't like that. And I'm not greedy. I just got to support my family. That's my job. And when the communication wasn't quick enough, well, that just, for me, that just says a lot. And so I personally made a decision, not my agent. I tell my agent what to do. He doesn't tell me what to do. He may give me advice, but I tell him what to do. Basically, we said that we're going to go work for Ring of Honor. Now, we didn't say, your contract sucks, we're done with you. That's not what we said. We left the door open, and I went to Ring of Honor, and I wrestled in Nashville, Tennessee. That wasn't, and it was just a coincidence that it was in Nashville, Tennessee. That wasn't to go and try to slap them in the face or whatever. It was just coincidence.
Now you mentioned Ring of Honor, and for the, you know, I'm assuming a lot of people out there are familiar with your career. You were started in Ring of Honor, and then coming full circle, what was it like what was it like for you returning to Ring of Honor?
Oh, I got to tell you, man, I was a little nervous because I felt like here comes another guy, you know, from a company that was on TV that people, you know, and here he comes into our house going to try to invade, you know, what we've done, what we've built up, what we've worked hard for, and try to be the star and not do anything. You know, I was afraid that was the attitude that I was going to receive from the locker room of Ring of Honor. Yet it was not that at all. They opened up their arms and welcomed me in, man, like I'd never left. And that meant the world to me that they did that, and that they didn't think less of me for being out of the company, but they thought, okay, man, hopefully this guy's going to go out there and work hard, and which I did, and I appreciate that. But it was nice, man, to go somewhere where, you know, despite Ring of Honor losing a bunch of guys, you know, that core of guys that went to other places, they've always had tons of respect from the wrestling community and always had respect for me. And it was nice to finally get back, you know, I don't want to say I'd lost respect, but it was nice to be in there where in a place where it's very respected.